Okay, so what I want to talk about today are some simulations that my student Kwang Ho Park, actually graduating PhD student, is graduating this summer, has done on the problem of accretion onto intermediate mass black holes when you include the effect from large scales, when you include the effect of radiation feedback. So basically, this is the modified Bondi problem in which you allow the central black hole to emit a certain amount of luminosity that is proportional to the accretion rate through some efficiency parameter. And so the luminosity varies according to the accretion rate, and therefore it produces a self-regulated, some kind of self-regulated accretion. So I will be mostly talking about accretion on non-moving black holes, and then I'll have a few slides on work that is in, and this is stuff that has been published, and then I'll have a few slides on work in progress that is accretion on moving black holes. Okay. But this doesn't work because I could just actually do this. Yeah. Okay, so this is a little bit more than five slides, but again, you know, this is an informal discussion. No, I can, you know, skip any number of slides. I mean,
it should be, I guess, informal.
I just wanted to give a lunch talk because, of course, there are simulations, so there are a few movies that I couldn't do, you know, at the 11 o'clock coffee break. But so the setup is the following. So basically, Kwang Ho has run a hydro simulation using ZEUS-MP and has included the basically one-dimensional radiative transfer model into it. One-dimensional means that there is only the source of the radiation is only at the center, the black hole at the center, and then we calculate radiative transfer along the rays. This is most of the simulation are either 1D or 2D. And of course, the radiation is coupled to the hydrodynamics. So there are the physics that is included is photoheating, photoionization. We have multispecies. We have hydrogen and helium. And we follow the ionization states of hydrogen and helium. We use a logarithmic setup, so it's a log mesh in the radial direction, so we can achieve very high resolution near the black hole. And the initial conditions are spherical, so the setup is such that at the beginning you basically put a black hole in the medium of a uniform density, uniform temperature medium, and you start accreting basically. We have also explored what happens if you add some angular momentum to the gas, but that's I'll mention that later. And the main thing with the main idea behind all of this simulation, and we try to do a parametric study, basically try to provide the analogous of the Bondi formulas, but when you include the effect of radiation transfer. So we have basically run a bunch of simulation, and then we have basically from the result derive an analytical model and scaling relation that you can use. For instance, if you want to put these black holes into large-scale cosmological simulations.
In initial conditions, is the gas in hydrostatic equilibrium?
Yeah.
In the potential, including the self-gravity of the gas, or it's negligible? Or?
No, we don't include the self-gravity of the gas. That is negligible unless the black hole is several a million solar mass or so. But we mostly focus on relatively small black holes, intermediate mass black hole, and then if you start to think about larger black holes, things get more complicated because typically they live inside the potential of a galaxy, and then there are other things as well. So in theory, these are relatively scale-free relationship. The problem is when you go to large mass black hole, the physics becomes more complicated because you have the bulge of the galaxy, you have star inside the Strongen sphere, you have all kind of other complications.
You don't resolve to the equation of this kind of issue?
We don't resolve to the gravitational radius of the black hole.
There's no equation, is there?
Yeah, the
opposite
is
from
the, I saw this little picture.
We account for that by basically putting a time delay between the accretion rate and the luminosity output. Try to simulate the fact that as the if you don't have radial info, you have an accretion disk, and therefore there could be a time delay or a smoothing of the relationship between luminosity and m dot. But basically, we resolve something like 1/1,000 of the Bondi radius, something like that. It depends on the simulation. So the parameter space is like between 100 to 1,000. I don't know how this up to date these are, but to about 1,000 solar mass black holes, the density between 1,000 to 10 to the 8, actually, centimeter to minus 3, the temperature between a few thousand to 14,000, radiative efficiencies from very small to 0.1.
But the temperature, I mean, what do you mean, temperature? All the gas initially has one temperature? It has a temperature profile, right?
No. It's a uniform density, a uniform temperature gas.
How can it then be 100 seconds
different? You mean due to the self-gravity of the gas?
No, the black hole, right?
Initially it's not hydrostatic with the black hole. It's an hydrostatic equilibrium without the black hole. Then you put the black hole in, and the gas start to fall, like the Bondi problem, start to be accreted.
So that's
what?
Isn't that a crazy initial condition?
Why? I mean, you can. That's what we want to study, how the black hole accretes.
It's just uniform density, no hydrostatic equilibrium.
Yeah, no hydrostatic equilibrium. Yeah, no hydrostatic equilibrium in the sense. Okay, fine. You're right. No, it would be hydrostatic equilibrium if there was no black hole, in the sense that the gas would stay at that density and that temperature. For instance, we have simulated a multi-phase medium at a certain point, in which you have a cloud and an intercloud medium, and that again, assuming pressure. Uniform pressure is in equilibrium situation.
Are you sure that the discussion is feeding of new gas, such that when your black hole grows, the amount of mass in your holes increases, and you sort of end up with equilibrium situation? Is that, or you just set up this spherical thing?
There are boundary conditions which we set at infinity, constant density, constant temperature, but the box is big enough that basically.
It's not continuously creating gas from the outside, so ultimately might go to the equilibrium
system. How much mass is in the box?
Oh, it's much, much bigger than the mass of the black hole at the center, because it's a log grid, so it's...
practical purposes, you might go to the situation of equilibrium.
It's basically... So, I mean, of course, what we have started to do is to simulate the Bondi problem without radiation, and we can reproduce the Bondi and the Bondi-Littleton formula very well. Okay, so the when I say Bondi-Littleton is the one for the moving black hole as well. We also changed the spectrum of the radiation, getting a harder or it's basically a power law when we change the index to make the spectrum harder or softer. So basically, these parameters here are related to the type of accretion disk that you form at the center down here, and this is just the ambient. Where you put the black hole in the galaxy. Okay. So, give you an example of a simulation. So the bottom half is the ionization fraction. So white is fully ionized, is the strongest sphere, and red is neutral. And on the top is the density. And again, you know, yellow is higher density and darker is lower density. So the typical result of the simulation is a bursting type of accretion on the black hole and therefore luminosity. So basically, So this is clearly 2D because, you know, you can see that. But in fact, for this type of problem, the 1D simulation give basically the same results as the 2D simulation. There is no difference for the duty cycle of the black hole. So how long it stays on with respect to the time stays off, and for the mean accretion rate and stuff like that, it's all basically you can explain that with a one-dimensional simulation and with a one-dimensional problem.
These little spokes, I mean, that's
actually just great effects. Well, where the density is higher, you get that the H3 region is more trapped, and where it depends on the column density of on neutral gas, right? Where is the location of the.
I mean, the problem is set up completely spherical.
Oh, why it becomes non spherical?
Because you see these little finger sites.
Yeah.
Right now, it's presumably just because you're dealing with a few grid points in the middle.
Well, it's simply because there are hydrodynamical instabilities that develop. So even if you start from perfectly spherical initial condition, you break the symmetry. And here you don't see it very much, but in fact...
What is the time scale?
So the time, I will get into that, but basically, at the end, the period of the oscillation is the crossing time of the H2 region. And then I think this is parsec. This is a 100 solar mass black hole. It's scaled with the mass of the black hole, of course.
What's the little dashed line at the center?
Oh, this? I think this is the inner boundary radius. So is the boundary radius calculated for the temperature inside the H2 region? Because basically, I will show you in a second, you can understand all of this by basically saying that the accretion rate, the mean accretion rate on this black hole, is what you would get if you apply, if you use the Bondi formula inside the ionized bubble.
But how do you get the luminosity? I mean, luminosity must come from accretion, basically.
The luminosity, yeah.
So, I mean, what I mean, so once the gas goes in, it starts to ionize ceramics, but where does the luminosity come from?
But where the luminosity come from? It comes from the center because it's totally unresolved, the accretion disk.
So you assume that within the body,
with
yes.
Yeah. So this is actually, this is linear scale, right? This simulation actually is done in log scale. So we actually can, you cannot see here, but we can resolve down to very close to the center of the black hole. And this is the inner boundary radius. It's not the limit of where our simulation stops. I mean, we resolve this very well. Okay, so we can get much.
Either
a disk or, I mean, typically there will be a disk, basically, of some sort. Either is a thin or a thick disk, but yeah. At the very, very center, there is going to be a disk. And so we are. This is why we change the ether that basically the luminosity is proportional to ether times m dot c squared. Right, and this ether is either 0.1 if you have, you know, a very thin disk, basically, or it could be much less if you have less efficient thick disk or less efficient accretion, even radial accretion.
Do you expect much stronger Rayleigh
This is let me go for a second here. So this is, for instance, a similar simulation with higher density. And you clearly see the instability, Rayleigh error, and other develop much more that produce this.
This is still in 2D.
This is still 2D. In 3D, the growth rate is going to be different, probably. Yeah. We haven't yet try to do the 3D simulations. Also because at the end, our results were not changing when you were going from 1 to 2D.
Your oscillation time scales are short, probably.
The what?
Your oscillation time scales are short.
Are very short. That's why the thing doesn't really develop very much most of the time, the instabilities. But definitely you create all of these dense knots. And then if you start to think about supermassive black hole, you have just to scale all of the simulation to much larger scales. So the mass in these knots could be, in theory, they could be self-gravitating knots, I don't know, as you think of scaling these to larger masses.
Sorry, I'm confused now. So you say it's 2D, but it's probably been set up 2D, but the simulation is actually done in 3D.
No, it's a 2.5 if you want. It's assuming It's 3D, but assuming spherical symmetry.
Is this a slice through it? Or
yeah, this. No. It's not a slice. This is the whole simulation.
What you show here cannot be, right? I mean, if it's symmetric or made, then any slice would look the same. And if this is a slice, I would expect the same on the right and left, and I don't see it.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is not, as Peng said, when you start to form these fingers, you expect these to be fingers that are thin. But in our simulation, they are not, because you assume
this is point.
A symmetry.
Assume
yeah.
It's because it's not the same. It's not right.
It is, yeah.
It's not.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's not. It means the symmetry is broken, so these are not anymore thin sticks, like this shadowing and these little blobs.
Is your axis of symmetry the horizontal line? Are you just doing isn't it the x-axis?
Ah, okay.
Yeah, it's
the top and the bottom. Right. Not to,
this?
Yeah.
What difference would it make?
Well, I'm assuming it's not the same thing as on the bottom half and the top half. The bottom half would look the same.
Yeah.
The only reason is the bottom half is putting something else than the top half.
Right? Yeah, the bottom half is showing the ionization fraction. For instance, you can see this finger here and this finger here. Right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you wouldn't see the correspondence.
Okay.
Keep in mind, this is a 2D simulation. Okay. How does the thing work? So this is what you find for the accretion ray. It's extremely regular. The period, it's very, very well determined. And the length, the duration of the bars is very, very short. So in fact, if you calculate the ratio of this delta t over the period, it's about 6%. Okay, so there is a duty cycle of 6%. And the 1D run and this is 2D run show basically the same results.
What kind of delay have you put in?
Here there is no delay, but when we put the delay, until the delay becomes of the order of the period, nothing happens.
Is duty cycle mass dependent?
So the duty cycle, yes. I will show that in a second. So the way this thing works is basically you have a bar of accretion. You create an H2 region. This H2 region stop the gas in falling on the black hole. And therefore, you have this bubble that is hot, that the gas inside this bubble start to get depleted. Okay, so the density of the gas inside the bubble slowly goes down. And the reason why it actually goes down is not because it's accreted by the black hole, but it's because there is a pressure gradient inside the bubble that tends to push the gas toward the shell. So the gas is coming in from outside and it's going out from inside, and it all accumulates on the shell, Eventually, the density inside the bubble gets so low that there is no anymore pressure support for the shell. Basically, the shell is heavy because it's dense and there is a gravity from the black hole. And so eventually, the shell cannot be sustained anymore by the pressure inside the hot bubble, and it kind of collapses on the black hole. It falls, and it creates another burst, and it goes on. It repeats.
But the shell doesn't collapse. It's like, well, you get a Kelvin Helmholtz insularity, and then the hot gas will stream out or something.
Yes, but in the previous simulation, here you didn't see much of a breaking of the shell. In fact, the shell was almost, the density contour was pretty low. In the simulation in the first page, definitely you see that it breaks. But it doesn't matter. At the end, the results I mean, this instability, I guess it develops slowly enough with respect to the crossing. So the time it takes for this thing to fall down is roughly the crossing time, the edge to region crossing time. And so you have to compare those time scales, how long it takes for the instability to develop and the crossing time. And typically collapse fast enough. Huh?
I'm just trying to understand physics, right? When you say collapse reminds me of free fall, right? There's no pressure. But there is pressure in the whole bubble.
It's not the free fall, is the sun crossing time.
So it's just that the external pressure exceeds the internal pressure at some point, and you turn it around.
Yeah.
While you see the inside, pressure must be rising all the time, because at the same time there's falling more material from the outside. At some stage you're heated to the material on the inside, and then at some stage you will just overwhelm.
Yeah, it's overwhelmed, so...
But I think it must be a critical point whether that happens before or after the performance of the Kelvin-Helmholtz instability, right? It must make a big difference.
Well, the Kelvin-Helmholtz instability happens either when the shock is accelerating this way, when it's actually not, where there is no acceleration of the in the front, is actually pretty stable. It's not developing the instability. Oh, the relay table. He's talking about the relay table. Yes. Yeah.
Because of the mass is accreted onto or into the black hole in every cycle.
Let me get to that in a second. So basically you can calculate what is the mean accretion rate and what is the accretion rate at the peaks. And typically the peaks are 20 times the mean in terms of accretion rate. Okay. So here is just to show the...
That's your 6% efficiency.
Yeah, actually, it's the 6% is the same thing, exactly.
If you take, zero or much bigger.
Yes, zero or much bigger, exactly. Very good. Yes, you're paying attention. this is just to show that there is a zero velocity. Inside the hot bubble, there is a zero velocity line. So there is this pressure gradient that tends to push the gas toward the shell. And, of course, inside the zero velocity line, there is the gas is falling on the black hole. But basically, this is typically the time scale for depletion is dominated by this outflow, if you want. We'll see later that is not always the case. But for this simulation, I show you just this is what happens. So the parameter study basically, we vary the radiative efficiency, the mass of the black hole, the density at infinity, the temperature at infinity, and we found what is the maximum of the accretion rate. This lambda is the accretion rate normalized to the Bondi rate. Okay, what you would get if you just use the Bondi formula. This is the at the peak. This is the mean accretion rate, and this is the period of the cycle. And we found all this relation, but basically at the end, the idea is that the mean accretion rate actually changes depending if you include helium heating and cooling. So, but including helium, you get 1% of the Bondi. 1% of the Bondi rate. And this is assuming a temperature at infinity of 10 to the 4 Kelvin. And in fact, if you see the accretion rate depends pretty steeply on the temperature at infinity. If you decrease the temperature, the accretion rate is much smaller than 1% bonding. So it's very, very inefficient. And it depends even more steeply on the temperature inside the hot bubble, as T to the minus 4. So the spectrum of the radiation, for instance, is going to change that number. As well as, this is basically a gas that is metal-free in the simulation. It just has hydrogen and helium. If you start to think about putting in metals, the details of what is T in, and basically this translating what is the average efficiency is going to change as well. And and this is the duty cycle, depends also a little bit on the parameter, but mostly it's the order of 6%. Okay, how do you understand this form? It's pretty simple. Any idea? So what is really cool about this, I mean interesting, is that basically the accretion rate, not in units of the bonding rate, but just the accretion rate, m dot, is proportional to the pressure of the ambient gas. Okay? Because the bonding rate is proportional to the density divided by t infinity to the 1.5. So if you multiply this formula by that, you get that the accretion rate, m dot, is n times t infinity. So it's the pressure at infinity that determines what is the accretion rate.
Question. So I mean, you say you don't resolve the equation this, right? So there's some radius where you have to match the boundary conditions here, right? Because you have stuff flowing in, but suddenly it sits into an equation disk. Right, but then all the time scale change and you have the equation of the time scale equation there. And these things need to match, otherwise this equation is just keep on growing or suddenly disappear completely.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So do you actually match those time scales in your simulation that the accretion disk matches the accretion rate on the outside in such a way that your radiation, right, is actually set by the accretion rate itself?
On the outside, you mean at the inner boundary?
Well, I mean at some point, right, here we have gas that reaches a certain radius, and then you sort of manage to put that into an increasing risk, I presume.
Yeah, I can do that, or put a delay for doing that.
Yeah, but I mean, right, given an accretion disk set up with a given mass for accretion rate, right, there's also a time scale associated with that. That means the mesh.
Oh, you mean if m dot...
If the ultimate m dot is not the same as the m dot at
my inner boundary,
then
you will have accumulation of gas, right?
Right. So you match those conditions exactly.
Well, I mean, you cannot do that. We are assuming that basically there is no accumulation of gas. Is a kind of steady.
So you're matching the accretion rates and the luminosity of your accretion disk is set by the accretion rate at that particular.
Radius. Yeah. And all we have tried so far is to add either a time delay, so that there is a, you know, the gas doesn't fall like on a free-fall time scale on the black hole, but it kind of starts to rotate a little bit. And also a kind of a smoothing of the accretion rate and the luminosity.
Does your gas recombine between the births?
Yes, you mean, you saw the movie, right? I mean, the H2 region was kind of pulsating, right?
So the energy injection is throughout the bubble, so it bursts, and then it expands, and then it recombines,
yeah.
And then you can
inject. Yeah. Now, let me just very quickly tell you. Peng knows how to derive this formula, right? We just talked about that. You forgot, bro.
I'm not sure I could, but...
So basically, the idea why you get something like this is that you can derive that formula by just applying the Bondi formula inside the hot bubble, okay? So the Bondi formula is m dot is proportional to the density at infinity divided by the temperature, usually the temperature infinity at to the 1.5, right? And then m squared, but let's not consider for now the mass square of the black hole. So usually it's t infinity, but here you have to replace, if you replace this t infinity with t inside the bubble, yeah, in, and t inside, then you get that. And you get that if you assume that n infinity t infinity, sorry, inside is equal to n infinity t infinity. So pressure equilibrium outside and inside the bubble. If you do that, you can. This is a homework for next time. You can convince yourself that you get this relationship for T infinity. This T in, you should get to the minus 2.5, you actually get minus 4. And the reason for that is because it's not exactly the Bondi problem inside the bubble, because there is a pressure gradient inside the bubble. So then there is an effective Bondi radius, really. It's not the real Bondi radius that determines this m dot, but there is an effective Bondi radius that depends on the pressure gradient, and therefore there is an extra dependence on T in because of that. Okay, but I think the main thing I wanted to...
Tell me again. Is this independent of where I start with initial conditions that are stratified?
Stratified, non-uniform.
Yes.
No, I would imagine that would make things more complicated. Not more complicated.
More realistic.
Why more realistic? I mean,
because you never start a universe with your residency phase, and then out of nothing pops a black hole into existence.
But of course,
the building of a black hole creates that stratified density thing to start with, right?
But of course, you know, the density
from one region or from one density to another.
Yeah.
It moves to another region, and then it suddenly has a certain density, and then it has to react to.
In clusters, this is not thought to happen, right? When you sit in a hot atmosphere, the accretion is thought to be in a different regime. The feedback comes not as radiation, but as in form of jet.
Yeah, again, all of this is assuming that the output is regulated by the radiation feedback. If you have a jet, it's a completely different thing. And also, if you have an axisymmetric radiation field, like Proga and other people have looked into this, by assuming that the radiation field is not isotropic in space, but is basically like a jet type of thing, like a wind.
Feedback is a lot. It requires a certain rate of accretion that was specific. There is a certain regime of accretion where you get radiated feedback, right?
I don't know. I mean, the thing I can tell you is that these results, for this result, as you see, the accretion rate doesn't depend on ether, on the radiative efficiency. And you can think that in the case where you are jet dominated, there is an ether for the radiation that is very small, but non-zero. So this effect will happen even if you have other type of feedback, but perhaps what could happen is that it's totally irrelevant because the other type of feedback are dominant. Like if the jet is dominant with respect to this effect, it doesn't matter. All of this, I'm telling you, doesn't matter. But in general, you can think, even when you have a jet, you can think that there is a lower efficiency of conversion of m dot c squared into radiation that is non-zero, and you should have something like this. I mean, I can change this ether, basically, to have a very radiative efficient feedback or very inefficient. But the point is that most of this simulation, I think, when you start to push the idea to supermassive black hole, yes, you have to start to worry about all of this kind of stuff, plus the potential of the galaxy, the potential of the stars, the feeding through stellar winds of the black hole. So it becomes complicated. But I think for intermediate mass black hole, this is actually, it seems to me relatively realistic. The sizes of this H2 region are 10 to the minus 2 parsec or something like that for intermediate mass black holes. And so to go back to your question, I mean, you start with this initial condition, but then, of course, as you run the simulation, you get a whole kind of stratified density profile around the black hole. If you didn't have radiative transfer, you would get the typical Bondi profile for the density. So, I mean, if you like, I mean, in fact, in some simulation, we started by first getting the Bondi profile and then turning on the radiation, and you get exactly the same results. I mean, it doesn't depend on the initial condition as long as you don't have a density varying at the boundaries. density variation at the boundaries.
I mean, the ambient pressure scale height is probably a lot larger than the length scales.
So I think this is, for instance, if you want to use this to put in cosmological simulation, this is, I think, what you should do. I mean, this type of setting, I think this is what is necessary. But OK, I think what is interesting is that the period of the cycle, what does it determine the period of the cycle? Basically, it is the sound crossing time of the H2 region. Okay, it makes sense because that is how long it takes for the gas to be pushed toward the shell and so be depleted so that there is no any more pressure support and the shell falls in.
What sets the size of the H2 region?
It's simply the Strongen sphere. You can calculate it by...
I understand that, but just the number of photons you get out of some clearing of the creators of efficiency. But that still doesn't determine how much in each cycle you create. What will then set the size of the Strongen sphere?
So the size of the Strongen sphere, this is an average sign. Okay, so if you use the average accretion rate to calculate the size of the Strongen sphere, then it get the right relationship between the cycle and the NRS. Okay, for the average using
the. What do you use for the nominations of hydrogen atoms there? I mean, that varies continuously. So what do you?
Yeah, that's a good question that I try to remember. I think it's the energy infinity. Actually, what is very interesting is that as the density inside the Strongen sphere goes down, because you know it gets depleted, right? The size of the Strongen sphere remain about the same. It doesn't change. You would expect that it should get bigger because you know you have the density goes down, so you should get a larger region. But it doesn't because...
You see it there, right? If you look at the squares, you have density. And all these squares, it will heap around the same radius.
Mm-hmm. These are all different simulation with different parameters.
Yeah, but you're changing NH there, right? From 5 times 10 to the 5 to whatever, like 10 to the 7.
Yeah.
And the radius for all of those things.
Yeah, no, but I was more... Yes, but I was talking more about as a time... For one single simulation, the time-dependent evolution. Because the density goes down, and so you have less recombination, you should get a larger, for a given luminosity, you should get a larger Strongen sphere. But in fact, it remains about the same, because the luminosity goes down as well. As the gas is depleted inside the Strongen sphere, the luminosity goes down, the density goes down, and the two things kind of balance out in such a way that the Strongen sphere remain about constant. The RS remain about the same.
Probably set by the number of photons you release in the duty cycle, which is set by the sound crossing time. Right? So it's the amount you can accrete in the sound crossing time.
Yes.
The number of photons you release and then it sets.
Yes. Time. Yes.
No, I think Zero is not first, but I think he's not bounded by the number of photons, but he's bounded by the recombinations. So once he goes to a certain radius, he needs to balance the recombination, and that's the reason why there is actually a fixed size that scales in that way.
But I see, because the recombination time goes as 1 over the density, so does the Bondi accretion rate. So those two timescales cancel out.
Okay. But this is, okay, what I want to have time to show is that, so this is what you get for a parameter ranges between 100 to 100 solar masses and between 1,000 to 10 to the, 7. You get that. But now, what we try to do is to push the density and also change the mass of the black hole such that actually you get into the average accretion rate becomes close to the Eddington rate. Okay, so when you start to be limited by the Eddington rate and radiation pressure becomes important. In this simulation you include also radiation pressure on the electrons and on neutrons to photoionization. And so, as expected, as you go to higher and higher density, the luminosity gets closer to the Eddington luminosity. Eventually, lambda is not anymore proportional to the Bondi rate, but is limited by the Eddington rate, and this is the lambda Eddington. Okay, you cannot create more than Eddington. Now, what actually is very interesting is that there is this change in regime that I think pretty much by, to a certain extent, by coincidence. It's also a change in regime in the duty cycle. Okay? So you have two modes of accretion.
Yeah. You say you can't accrete, but I see one suggests a very different way of that.
This?
No, that one is the one all the way to the right there.
This?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't say, but this is the average accretion rate, and this is the peak. The open symbols is the peak accretion rate. So at the burst, actually, you can go super Eddington in the simulation.
It also says it's without radiation pressure.
And also, it's possible that it's somewhere without radiation pressure.
If you would really go to 3D, right, I would expect this picture. I mean, because you're sort of building in a symmetry, right? So sort of, it's easy to deposit all these photons in your material. But if you, right, if you go to 3D and you get streams, right, then you can way exactly overshoot this.
Yes.
So,
yes.
I mean, this result might be, right, because you're forcing.
These are 2D simulations, so you have that, but there is, in fact, you can get for at the peak that you go above Eddington.
You get these sort of streams.
Also because it's such a short time scale, but on average, I mean, if you do the average, it's pretty much agrees with being Eddington limit at time average accretion. But I think what is interesting, that was a bit of a surprise to us, is that there are two modes of oscillation. So here the duty cycle is 6%. When you go here, it's 50%, the duty cycle. And this is how it looks like. So this is mode one, where the duty cycle is 6%, and this is mode two, where the duty cycle is 50%. And basically, the bursts, you still have bursts and period where you have quiescence. But for instance, the H2 region in mode 2, it's basically not, it's pretty much stationary. You still have waves of gas that kind of makes it in and, well, this is a looping, that makes it in and modulate the accretion rate and the luminosity. But it's much more gentle.
So I'm still a bit confused about the role of the central engine.
Yeah.
So would not can tell that really matters for luminosity be determined by the accretion disks and not the actual? I mean, so the actual force applies the mass, it settles into accretion disk. And after that, it's just determined by viscosity in the disk, how fast the gas flows and what the luminosity of the disk is. But there you just assume it.
Yeah.
It assumes that nothing accumulated.
So what
just accretes onto the black hole, and 6% of the energy, the rest of the energy comes out of the radiation.
Or it's just a strong assumption.
It is, but
it raises at the mean of the radiation, and that radiation comes from the disk, and the disk has its own.
Well, it yes, it could well be that it is modulated by the physics of the accretion rate.
So what accretion rate is strong enough to think that this what happens in this doesn't matter?
No, I mean, it's just a question of time scales. I mean, the time scale for this oscillation is much longer than the typical viscous time scale for the gas to go in the center of the disk, typically. Yeah. So the period between bursts and all of that is much longer. In fact, it's 1 giga year for supermassive black
hole. How long do you know?
Yeah, so you could, when you put, you know, if you have the simulation that can resolve everything down to the Schwarzschild radius, then that peak would probably be broken in a lot of substructure. I mean, if you start to look at finer timescales that are a fraction of the burst period, then for sure the details of the accretion disk would matter.
But you effectively assume that if you modulate your your accretion rate on that radius where you can still resolve, right, that you instantaneously set up an accretion disk with that particular.
It's not instantaneous. Rate. We can play with it and put all kind of function.
That would mean you don't have a time like evolving accretion disk. That's impossible to do.
I could put by hand simply a time delay or smoothing right. The accretion rate with whatever function they have, whatever shape you want. I wouldn't change the result.
All the time so quick that.
Yeah, one way you could do it is basically just put the accretion just at very small radii and then let just the stuff accumulate and each time become self unstable and rushes in. So yeah. That's the time scale that much.
And then you'll have the outside.
It would just have a cycle of much more time
scale. Yeah.
But the radiation really, pressure would be spread over.
Yeah,
it would. I mean, as long as for the thing we have tried, we didn't. There was no way of changing the long period oscillation.
Well, so you put radiation pressure on atoms, right?
Right.
But at those type of densities, it would be very dusty and very high condensity for dust, and you would get a strong boost.
Yeah. I mean, this is metal-free. When you start to put metal, things get more complicated. I don't think the physics would completely change. You would have a similar type of, but the numbers would completely change.
But you can manage the substitution to create a wall in this gas, right? So you create mass energy, sweep it completely.
Right. You really can't blow it out because there's just this reservoir of constant density gets around it.
So physically, you can
unbind
the gas.
Can
you
not open up on
that?
I mean, pretty much when you have the bars, you
stop it after one cycle.
It's just back to where you started.
Actually,
that's not a galaxy. Yeah. There's a boundary to the galaxy, and you push it out, and then the gas doesn't come back.
But this is rather an academic situation that does not occur in nature.
No. Intermediate mass black hole. Intermediate mass black holes. Why not?
Black holes are embedded in infinite.
As far as
a small black hole hitting a molecular cloud.
Right.
But you cannot
buy it. Yeah, but this size for intermediate mass black hole is 10 to the minus 2 parsecs, okay? In most cases, the actual size is a fraction of a parsec. Now,
the density is the uses are already high, because you have to assume that it's in some
very
structure.
Yeah.
So it's not the IGN.
No.
You made an important point. So, what was the scale you said of this sort of finite region? You said it was of order 100.
It scaled with the mass of the black hole, of course. But for 100 solar mass black holes, roughly, you see the range here. This you change between 100 to 800, and the density varies between, as I said before.
In a time
length of power,
right? This is a value.
It's relatively small, yeah, with respect, is of the order of the size of dense. Yeah.
I was also curious, I didn't see an X-ray precursor for the temperature. I would have thought we actually preheat the material long before the ionization formed. The other question I had was on unheating, so that the central part actually would be quite a bit hotter than the one.
Yeah, the Hampton heating, I think, I keep forgetting in which simulation is in and which is out. I think it's in. But for intermediate mass black hole, it's really in the inner parts that Compton heating becomes very important. As you go to more massive black hole, it starts to get more and more important. Again, this is another limitation of scaling this to very large black holes. But for intermediate mass black hole, I think it's not the regulating Compton heating mechanism, at least in our simulation, it doesn't seem to be. And what was your other question?
It was about the X-ray precursor, the pre-ionization that you have.
Yeah, that. It should be UV, right? Hard UV more than X-rays that produce the precursor. Because the mean free path of the X-ray is so long that basically you don't see really a shell.
Light is just you considered a very wide range of spectral.
Which we vary that quite a bit.
But do you consider frequency bins?
Yeah, yeah, it's like thousands of frequency bins. You can do this precisely. It's not, there are no three bins like in the simulation, 3D simulations. This is a really well-resolved spectrum. Yeah. So you're surprised you don't see that? Yeah, I mean, you have a precursor, but it's scaled with the density. So a very high density is very thin, right? The precursor usually, it scales as, I think, 1 over the density, the thickness. And it's produced by hard UV and stuff. And I think it's very thin in this simulation. So the transition from ionized to neutral is pretty sharp.
Well, is there a high energy cutoff that you
use? I don't know. I think it's I forgot. Maybe an MeV or something like that.
Well, it can't be because we had some that wouldn't converge at minus 0.5.
What's that?
Anyhow.
Ah, yeah, yeah, yeah. If you get the, yeah. Actually, I think the cutoff depends also on the slope of the spec. But I understand, yeah, what's your point. But
what was this bit about convergence?
The what?
What was this bit about convergence? Explain it to us.
You had some power laws are very extreme.
I have very, very shallow power laws, and where the energy per log bin would be dominated by the high, yeah. The 1.5, what was it? Any case, yeah, but we looked into that, changing the cutoff, and we don't get, I think we are convergent, basically. I think Kwang Ho looked at this in some detail. But I wanted just to tell you why you have this changing regime, okay? So why do you think you get this changing regime from mode 1 to mode 2?
It's not a gas pressure anymore,
very good. It's the accretion onto the black hole. The accretion onto the black, the time scale for depletion of the bubble gets dominated by the rate at which the black hole accretes the gas. So it's not anymore this
outflow, it's actually an inflow
that depletes the bubble. And it turns out that this critical density, so if you now you look at the like the previous plot, the period of the cycle versus the size of the Strongen sphere, basically if the time scale for accretion is the accretion onto the black hole, you should get that it goes as r cube, the relationship between the cycle and R should go like this, if you had Bondi rate accretion. So actually it doesn't do that because then you become Eddington limited, the accretion becomes Eddington limited. So you just start to do that, but then you go on to these other lines. And the reason why it happens right away is because in fact the critical density from switching from mode 1 to mode 2 is about the same as the critical density for switching from sub-Eddington to Eddington. So they're very close. And is independent on the black hole mass, but it depends a little bit on the temperature at infinity, eta, and these other parameters. So actually, it doesn't have to be like this, necessarily. You could change eta, you could change T infinity, and you could actually get critical densities that are quite different from each other. So it's kind of a coincidence that in our simulation, you go from switching duty cycle at the same time as you go from sub-Eddington to Eddington. But this is just how, because of the parameter that we use, but you could get different things. So I think I'm really, one more, two. This is the time scale for mode 2, and this is the time scale for mode 1 for the depletion of the bubble. Okay, that was. So, do you have any question, any other question on this? Because I wanted to show you very quickly the work in progress on moving black hole, and probably also I am. How much time do I have? Zero? I guess for Tom. So, Tom, you were asking me about this. So as you can see, the accretion on black hole, it's 1% bond. This is very inefficient. Okay, it's pretty bad. But for moving black holes, what we find, it's actually a bit more promising. How did I stop that? So what you do, you form a bow shock. So this is, again, the black hole moves this way, and you form a dense bow shock, and then this is the cometary shape, H2 region type thing. And what we did, we start to change the Mach number. And if you use the Bondi-Littleton formula, as you increase the Mach number, the accretion rate should go down, basically following this dashed line, because it basically goes down as the Mach number cube, one over the Mach number cube. We find that instead it goes down, but then start to go up, start to increase as you increase the Mach number. And it doesn't go up forever. Eventually, reality catch up with you, and and in fact, they start to go like the Bondi slope, the Bondi-Littleton slope, they start to go down again. But the bottom line is that, in fact, actually, it gets even more interesting because right now you see this is a steady state accretion. There is a regime in which you have oscillations, like for the non-moving black hole. I want to show you this because it's pretty recent. Okay, so basically this is how the accretion rate in units of Eddington goes, roughly. So this is, it goes up, and then it starts to go down like this. Now, if you have a bursting mode, the luminosity at the peak is shown in this solid line. It's about 10, 20 times again brighter than the average. So, and the other thing is that for a gas, let's say at 10,000 K, the non-moving black hole accretion rate is shown in this plot. It would be here. So actually, the moving black hole accretes much more efficiently than non-moving black hole.
Don't you run out of fuel?
Huh?
Don't you just move out of your galaxy?
What does the philosophy do? Parsecs per...
No, I think... yeah, I mean...
The velocity is roughly the dynamical velocity dispersion. So you're moving at... Your time scale of move out is several times shorter than dynamical time.
It's sort of not surprising. I think if you move out of your bubble...
No. This is a accretion from a uniform density.
Yeah, but you always ionize the bubble around you. So if you move fast enough, so you're basically moving it and not ionize gas here.
Yeah, but that.
Therefore, you can create better. That's the reason.
Yeah.
Afterwards, the normal Bondi formula, or the Littleton formula, catches up to you.
Huh?
If you adjust at a Mach number of 2 or so, you get these oscillations. Because you're just moving out of your bubble at the same speed as your bubble goes again.
So, what would be. According to this model, the point where it becomes unstable.
The reason why I have this reduced accretion rate compared to the Bondi accretion rate is because the bubble doesn't let you accrete from your key infinity.
Yeah.
So there's a higher temperature flows around, so you're accreting less. So if I move now into fresh cold gas all the time,
fresh?
I can accrete.
Fresh.
Because
you're moving, huh?
Yeah.
But
the ionization front is always in front of you.
I mean, the lights, if you stop shining.
It's only in front of you when you maintain creation of the ionizing photon.
Yeah, you typically do, like, this is the black hole, and the ionization front is always in front of you. It's always here.
Come back.
No, it never reaches there. This is the inner Bondi radius again. It never reaches the black hole. It never gets there.
With some fraction of speed of light.
Huh?
It's not, the ionization front isn't moving at the sound speed.
The ionization front is basically independent of the Mach number, the location of the ionization front. So this is the model we have. You can get actually the accretion rate modeling basically a D-type ionization front and stuff like all of that. And you get, this is the accretion rate. But the location of the ionization front, as you increase the Mach number, it's constant. It doesn't change. It's just that the shell becomes unstable when you reach this peak in the density inside. When the density inside becomes of the order of the density outside, then the front becomes unstable and then start to do those oscillations.
Sorry, but the ionization front doesn't change when you change the Mach number?
It stays there.
When you have a ram pressure that you have to balance, that's going up like Mach number squared.
This is the simulation, the ionization front remain constant. And basically you can derive that by using actually the Strongen radius calculation. If you use this luminosity and the density you get, it goes like this.
The Baroness gas will be swept by the ram pressure.
Hmm?
Baroness gas will be swept by the ram pressure.
Are we talking about ionization distance
to the black hole? Sorry. So here, this is all in the frame of the black hole, okay? So the distance between the front and the black hole is this, and it's constant. And you saw it in the movie as well. Actually, this is a black hole movie, a constant dense velocity, but we had a bunch of simulation which you slowly increase the velocity of the black hole. This front doesn't move.
So you're measuring in the direction upwind, right? So that
I am measuring this distance
right.
from
you're
here to here.
That's the same as when I would not move the black hole?
As the what?
So you see
as if I would not move the black hole. I put the black hole still.
No. This is for moving black hole.
But whether I move with 0.000 Mach or 2 Mach is the same.
Yeah.
But then it's 0 Mach and then it's different.
There is, of course, I mean, there is a transition region. I'm talking about this part of the yeah. No, it's not. Yeah, supersonic. Mach number larger than one. Yes.
So why is it so different from
the folding? The accretion rate, why it goes up instead of going down? So what happens is that you form this bow shock, and the gas behind the shock is basically at zero Mach number. So usually when you don't have radiation, the accretion for the bond, the little problem, you don't have a shock, the gas just goes like this, it's focused, it's shocked behind the black hole, and then gets accreted. That's how the bond, the Littleton formula is derived. So this is the cross section for that moving black hole. Here, it's basically go back to the normal bonding problem for non-moving black hole, because the gas stops here, and then the black hole sees a gas behind the shell that is pretty much a Mach number of one or less than one.
It must be that the density there is higher than in the non-moving case. That's why you can accrete faster.
Yes. Yes. For the non-moving case, very good, you have a pressure equilibrium. And therefore, only when the temperature inside and outside are the same, you can reach the same density. Otherwise, the density inside is always much lower than the density outside.
Now you have ram pressure that will increase.
Now you can get the density here to be equal to density inside.
You run it further, right? You saw that when this moving further, you see this very high density.
Yeah. As you increase the Mach number until you get to this peak.
Right. Yeah, that one.
So here is how the density increases with the Mach number. It gets to a peak where it's about one. So the ratio between the density inside and outside is one. Then unfortunately, there it starts to oscillate. But otherwise, the model would predict that the density that never increases about the outside density. And then you get back to the Bondi-Littleton formula, because then the Mach number starts to,
Okay.
Thank you.